Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas. I'm Chad Burleson, and this is The Chad Report. It is Sunday, January 25th, 2015. Hope everyone has had a great weekend. And here to join me, as always, my partner in crime, Jeff Rivers.
Hey, how you doing, Chad?
That depends on the next 12 seconds, Jeff.
Okay.
And you know what I'm alluding to, Jeff.
Oh, yes.
Our favorite basketball team, of course, the Dallas Mavericks, are taking on the New Orleans Pelicans right now. And it's 106 to 106 with 12 seconds left. And New Orleans is shooting free throws, and they just went up by 1 point. So,
oh, wow. Come on, go Mavs.
Keeping an eye on that. And, of course, Dallas took an immediate timeout, so I won't come back to that. We've had a good weekend, Jeff. It's gone by fast. Parts of it have been good. I should say, Jeff. Yesterday was good. We saw the movie Selma, which is outstanding. We've now seen two of the movies that are nominated for Best Picture, that and Boyhood, and I think that is Boyhood was a great movie. They took a lot of years to make that movie. It was really good. Selma was outstanding, and it gets an edge for me over Boyhood. I think you felt the same way.
Me too.
And I'm just outraged that there were no Oscar nominations for the actors from this movie. It's nominated for Best Picture, but the acting, none of the actors got nominated, including Martin Luther King Jr.
He did an excellent job.
He really did, and so it just. Yeah, it blows my mind. I don't understand how, you know, I'm still wondering why Forest Whitaker wasn't nominated last year for The Butler. So, you know,
right.
And several of my black friends are saying, look, you know, they're really pointing to this year and saying racism still exists in Hollywood. And, you know, Jeff, when you look at the three movies last year, The Butler, Fruitvale Station, and 42, The Jackie Robinson Story, none of those black actors were nominated. And, you know, some people say, well, 12 Years a Slave came out and kind of trumped that. You know what? All those were good movies, though, and,
right.
And you've got to take in. Do we have quotas? Can we only nominate one black actor, one black actress? You know what I'm saying? I don't think so. And so, I get their argument. I mean, I feel that. I can see why they would make that case. You know,
right?
It's unfortunate. There's a lot of great movies where people don't get nominated as they should. Movie that we saw with Ben Affleck, Gone Girl, and the lady in there is nominated for that, and I don't know why Ben Affleck didn't get nominated for Best Actor for that movie.
Exactly. Yeah.
I thought it was outstanding.
Job.
It was this movie is, you know, finally there was so much buzz about it, you know, and when it was out and we didn't watch it then, but we waited and when it came out on video, we watched it and excellent movie. But I don't know what the deal is because remember Ben Affleck got snubbed as best director for Argo, even though it won Best Picture.
Right.
So I don't know what's going on with the deal. And then all the people so upset that Ben Affleck is the new Batman. I think he's going to make a great Batman. I'm a Ben Affleck fan.
Christian Bale, I think.
Say it again.
I think he'd be better than Christian Bale.
Christian Bale, who sounded like Burgess Meredith as the Penguin. Yeah.
Right.
No, it was a horrible Batman. I'm sorry. And I love Christian Bale. He's a great actor. Did not like him as Batman. But anyway, moving on. Still keeping up on my game here. So 9 seconds left and no changing the score, I see. Just keep me updated on that, Jeff. I'm going to go on to the big story now, okay? A monster snowstorm is expected to slam into the Northeast on Monday and Tuesday, dumping what could be up to 3 feet of snow in Boston and New York, along with freezing rain and strong gusts, possibly reaching hurricane level. The storm is expected to hit northern New Jersey through southern Connecticut and freeze Rhode Island and parts of Massachusetts. By 5 p.m. Eastern Time, storm warnings had stretched to the Canadian border. Quote, I want everyone to understand what we are facing, most likely one of the largest snowstorms in the history of this city, said New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. He repeated throughout a Sunday afternoon news conference that people should expect delays, very slow or stalled commutes Monday evening. Whatever people do to be cautious, he said, do more. Quote, my message to all New Yorkers is prepare for something worse than we have ever seen before. Prepare to be safe. Take every precaution. Now is the time to get ready for this extreme weather, he said. Don't underestimate this storm. Earlier today, the National Weather Service has upgraded its blizzard watch to a blizzard warning for the area. From northern New Jersey through southern Connecticut, including New York City, 20 to 30 inches of snow is possible with winds gusting 55 to 65 miles per hour.
Wow. That's just terrible. I mean, this is like one of the first times I remember a snowstorm having this much, you know, threat to it, you know. That's amazing. Hopefully everybody will take heed and prepare for it.
It really is amazing. And also what's amazing, I've been just quickly going off, congratulations to the New Orleans Pelicans for defeating my Dallas Mavericks 109-106. So thank you, and go back to New Orleans. But anyway, going on with this, though, Jeff, the Weather Service's whiteout conditions will make travel extremely dangerous in the entire affected area. The blizzard warning is in effect from 1 p.m. Monday through Tuesday, with the worst conditions expected from late Monday evening through midday Tuesday. In Massachusetts, emergency management officials warn that the winter storm will be potentially historic and destructive. Snow in the southeastern part of Massachusetts could morph into a period of freezing rain, and a major nor'easter is likely to develop on Monday and move up the northeast coast, forecasters said. They're even saying, Jeff, that travel across Massachusetts could be impossible and life-threatening. It's unclear just how much snow might be on the way, but the National Weather Service is saying 1 to 2 feet is possible. So we're certainly going to, you know, have these people in our thoughts. We've got a lot of friends in that area. And
absolutely.
It's just, that's, wow, blizzard of the century is what this is being called, possibly the worst snowstorm on record ever.
Right.
So, you know, and we keep seeing these kind of things with these extreme weather.
Well, so people get to the stores right away and take heed on this because, I mean, there's going to maybe be no supplies tomorrow, you know. So, you know, everybody's going to be going out and buying stuff, so hopefully, you know.
If they haven't already,
I
would hate to be in the grocery store right now, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
New York City.
Well, I bet they'll be picked over on a lot of stuff, like water and, you know, they better get to the store quick.
Absolutely. And that warning does run from northern New Jersey to the Canadian border. That encompasses most of that area. So just that's a big swath of the Northeast there. So we definitely wish the best for everyone
absolutely
involved there. One of your favorite activities may actually be killing you, Jeff. Our entire modern world is constructed to keep you sitting down. When we drive, we sit. When we work at an office, we sit. When we watch TV, we sit. And yet a new study that's running in the Annals of Internal Medicine found that this kind of sedentary behavior increases our chances of getting a disease or condition that will kill us prematurely, even if we exercise.
Huh. That's wild.
So I'm thinking, what's the point then?
Right.
Researchers from Toronto came to this conclusion after analyzing 47 studies of sedentary behavior. They adjusted their data to incorporate the amount someone exercises and found that the sitting we typically do in a day still outweighs the benefit we get from exercise. Of course, the more you exercise, the lower the impact of sedentary behavior. But the studies showed sedentary behavior can lead to death from cardiovascular issues and cancers, as well as chronic conditions such as type 2 diabetes. Physical inactivity has been identified as the fourth leading risk factor for death for people all around the world, according to the World Health Organization. Prolonged sitting, meaning sitting for 8 to 12 hours or more a day, increased your risk of developing type 2 diabetes by 90%.
Wow.
So I...
I did not know that. I figured if you exercise like you should, then, you know, that would overcome that.
Well, the study authors did make some simple suggestions to help you sit less. One is just to be aware of how much you're sitting. That way you can make a goal of reducing that number a little bit each week. If you're at work, you could try a standing desk or make it a goal to stand up or walk around for a minute or three once every half an hour. And one of the things they really said, pointed out, Jeff, is if you watch TV at night, don't zoom ahead during the commercials with your DVR. Instead, walk around or at least stand up during the commercial break.
Right.
So, how dare they? First,
exactly.
Look, I'll give a few. Look, I'm willing to give up a couple of years, okay?
Right.
Pry this remote from my cold, dead hands. Forward, those are great, but it's really true, though, Joe. I think we probably sit now more than anyone in history.
Yeah, with the advent of computers especially, you know.
Oh, and the phones, and yes, it's just, it's just one thing after the next. As far as the sitting causing the juvenile diabetes and all this, it's just, we don't do, you know, kids don't play outside anymore. We've talked about this so much,
exactly.
Jeff, I don't want to run this thing around, but you know what I mean,
right.
Including adults. Adults don't do the physical activity they used to as well.
Exactly.
You know, that's why you see it. Even bowling, something, just something to move, you know?
Exactly.
I did want to go back, Jeff. I said we had a good weekend, but unfortunately, Friday night, it started out very tragically. At about 10:30 Friday night, Jeff and I lost a friend. I'm not going to name her name due to the fact that funeral services and everything is still pending, but... she was 38 years old. This is a woman that Jeff had worked with, not a lot, but enough to get to know her. And I got to know her through being, of course, a patient there. And she was a great Facebook friend of mine, and so we had a lot of conversations. And unfortunately, she got on Facebook on Friday night and said that she had a gun in her hand and that she was about to use it, and that 38 years had been long enough in this world, and she couldn't take it anymore, and she logged off and did exactly what she said she was going to do.
Yeah, this is terrible.
What was so odd is that I was just about to log out to, and I had gone back to my homepage, and I noticed her name come up, and I know she hadn't posted a lot lately, and I just read that first sentence about the gun in my hand, and that grabbed my attention.
Right.
And so I started reading down, you know, the different comments, you know, since she had posted that, and I just watched it play out, basically. And then her grandmother came on there and said that she had passed away from a gunshot to the head. And what the sad thing is, she has a nine-year-old son that just adores her. And
one thing I wanted to make clear, too, to the audience, that she was already gone by the time you had read this post.
Correct.
It wasn't like you were watching.
No. Thank you for that.
She was already gone. She no more posted that than minutes later she had
immediately
done it.
She answered. And what upset me, really,
tragic.
Jeff, is a couple of people chided her after she wrote that. Because, you know, we always hear when people, and I've actually made, you know, and, you know, we joke about it. You've got to be able to joke about death sometimes, you know. And we do. And I joked not that long ago about people getting on Facebook and saying, "Oh, I'm done," you know. It's usually a cry for help, you know. Most of the people that do that don't tell you, but you can't blame it, because there's been so many cases that they do exactly what they say they're going to do, and that's what she did.
Right.
And
that is tragic. My prayers go out to our prayers go out to the family and. You know,
absolutely, to her family and her friends. Her grandmother is the one that had to. She's the one that told us that she had passed away. And again, I don't judge people, Jeff. It's your life, and you choose. If you're that miserable here, that is an option. You know, that is
right.
Your option. What's sad to me is though that she had a child. So I kind of fought with a little bit of anger, but you know what? I thought somebody that miserable, and again, if no one's ever been severely depressed, it's the darkest place in the world, and there's just nothing to compare it to, really. Not a terminal disease. It's just so lonely and so. Because this girl had
depression. Can't be
she had it together too,
yeah.
Jeff. You know, she had some pains and some different things. But overall, she always had a smile on her face. Just I just never would have dreamed that would happen. I was awake all night. I mean, it really shocked me that much. And but yeah,
it's
just
terrible.
And so,
I think depression is a disease, though. When it lasts greater than 6 months, I believe. I think is what. At least that's what I learned back, you know, a long time ago in school.
And a lot of people will take people to task for committing suicide, saying it's the most cowardly thing you can do. It's very selfish, and that just makes my blood boil, Jeff, because their argument is there are people with cancer and AIDS, and they're not bailing out. They're not checking out. But
right.
But if you've never been severely depressed, you can't compare that. I've never had cancer. I've never had AIDS. So I really can't compare those. But I have been depressed before. I've been in a dark place before. You know what I mean? Not for very long, thank God. But long enough for me to get an idea of what these people go through. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I know you have as well, and I know many of our listeners have. And just don't judge people. Don't sit back and, you know, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, as they
exactly.
say. And I just hope that she is at peace and, you know, with the angels. She was an angel among us, is what I said on the post. And, you know, she's with her loved ones that preceded her in death. And hopefully she is in more peace than what she could find on this earth, unfortunately. You know?
Exactly.
So, anyway, we've got more to get to. But first, on this day in 1981, the 52 Americans who were held hostage by Iran for 444 days arrived back in the United States. At the movies, 9 to 5, an American comedy film starring Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, and Dolly Parton was in its sixth straight week, that's a tongue twister there, at the top of the box office, and the number one song on the land on this day in 1981 was this.
Our life together is so precious. Together we have grown, we have grown, although our love is still special, let's take a chance and fly away somewhere.
Zeppelin's own John Lennon, of course, a member of the Fab Four, and his the biggest solo hit of his career, Just Like Starting Over, number one for 5 straight weeks. And this was this had just been released. This was a posthumous when it hit number one, because, you know, in December of 1980, John Lennon was murdered outside his apartment by that whack job, Mark David Chapman, who had just, you know, John Lennon was so nice to him. I had autographed an album and autographed, and it just, the guy came back and shot and killed him right in front of his apartment. And I, you know, and that, there's so many people that love John Lennon. John Lennon stood for peace. John Lennon stood for so many great things. And it's just so tragic. You know what I mean? When somebody, you just never know when people are going to do. There's a lot of crazy people out there. You know?
Absolutely.
And John Lennon believed in the good and people and the love. And I think his message that it inspires people. And you know what's funny, John, I'm just looking over it, because I think John Lennon's signature, when you think John Lennon and you think of him solo, you think of Imagine first, that song Imagine.
Right.
Imagine was not even one of his top three biggest hits. Imagine was number three for 2 weeks. And but he had other hits that were bigger than that, including Woman and Instant Karma. So and a song called Whatever Gets You Through the Night with Elton John on backing vocal. But that was his 10th top 40 hit and his biggest, number one for 5 straight weeks. And a great song from a great guy. Speaking of New York, and, you know, we were just talking about this, Jeff. People, you were talking about people going out and getting their things. Breaking news, shoppers crowded into a Manhattan Home Depot store to prepare for an anticipated snowstorm streamed into the streets this afternoon after an employee shot a store manager and then pulled the gun on himself, according to NYPD spokesman Sergeant Brendan Ryan. The 38-year-old manager, who was shot in an aisle of the store, was transported to Bellevue Hospital, where he was later pronounced dead. The shooter, a 31-year-old male worker at the store, was not scheduled to work when he came in, Ryan said. The shooter was pronounced dead at the scene from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, according to the NYPD. Police recovered a .38-caliber revolver at the scene. And police so far have not speculated on a motive for the shooting, noting that the incident is still under investigation.
Wow.
So,
that's terrible.
It is terrible. And that's another thing. You've got to beware when you're out looking for those supplies, because, like you said, Jeff, I think you gave some great advice earlier. But, again, and back to the kind of with the John Lennon thing, you know, you've always kind of got to keep an eye over your shoulder, you know?
Absolutely.
And more so now than ever. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the family of the store manager and the gunman as well. So
definitely.
Very sad. Khalise Manning is being called a hero for helping her pregnant mother and calling 911 operators in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Quote, she's shaking and she's having a baby, Khalise tells a dispatcher in the 911 audio obtained by affiliate WWMT. My mom is really pregnant and she's having a boy and she really needs help. Her mother, Centaria Manning, who was 9 months pregnant and epileptic, had apparently fallen to the floor in the midst of a seizure on Wednesday. She said they had practiced what to do in an emergency. Quote, I was so proud of her because we practice and I teach her because I am epileptic, Manning said. I taught her the address and my full name and things like that and how to dial 911. Her fiancé was at work at the time. And in a lighter moment during the nearly 7.5-minute call, a dispatcher asked Khalise, how old are you, honey? Khalise responds, 4, before adding an important detail. Yes, and I'm almost getting bigger, she said.
Wow, 4 years old. That's a good thing the mother, practice with her.
Absolutely, and a happy ending. The mother was taken to the hospital where her healthy baby brother, TJ Manning, was born on Friday morning. Wearing an I'm the Big Sister t-shirt, Khalise told WWMT, a reporter for them, that at the hospital, it was really good to ride in the ambulance with Mom. The dispatcher who handled the call told the station that she's recommending Khalise get an award for being calm in a scary situation. And good for her, and I think she does deserve an award for that. That's thinking on your feet at an early age, and you know, we need more people like that that can do that.
Definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
Wow, that's incredible. Okay. All right, Jeff. We know that there are many of us have surnames passed down to us from, especially white people, from the our ancestors in England. Last names weren't widely used until the Norman Conquest in 1066, but as the country's population grew, people found it necessary to be more specific when they are talking about somebody else. Thus arose descriptions like Thomas the Baker, Norman, son of Richard, Henry the Whitehead, Elizabeth of the Field, and Joan of York that ultimately led to many of our current surnames. There are perhaps 45,000 different English surnames, but most have their origins there's seven types, Jeff. Occupational, such as like carpenter, you know, baker, that's where some of those come from.
Right.
This is something describing a personal characteristic, such as short, long, little, black, white, green, those kind of names. Surnames based on a place, like where the person was born or lived, or, you know, and that's where you get like Hamilton, Hampshire, Sutton, stuff like that. From the name of an estate is another one of the seven. From a geographical feature of the landscape, like brooks, bush, rivers, in your case. Patronymic or ancestral names as well, like Benson, the son of Ben, Welsh for Jones is Welsh for John, Nicholson, Richardson, those type.
Right.
And also signifying patronage. Some surnames honored a patron. Hickman was Hicks Man, but Hick became a nickname for Richard. Kilpatrick was a follower of Patrick. So that's where those came from. And so I took the liberty, Jeff, of typing in Burleson and Rivers. And I'll do yours first. Rivers is your last name comes from – it's French, Jeff. You know, we've –
I'm surprised.
And because we've actually debated before, because both of us have Native American ancestry as well. And River is a Native American word as well, you know, as well. They use that to
right.
name, so we weren't sure about that.
Exactly.
And according to Ancestry.com, and if you go to them right now for the next 2 weeks, this is really cool because you can type in your surname and it'll break down a lot of things for you. But just a couple things. The name Rivers comes from northern France, Jeff, and it's the plural form of rivers, but it was pronounced Rivier. Is where that comes from. And so get it over here and Americanize it, and we take that Riviera and call it Rivers. Okay? So, and, Jeff, do you have any idea the state with the most rivers in it in the United States?
Oh, wow.
Percentage-wise, not number-wise.
As far as states. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm going to say Tennessee.
Very close. South Carolina, 16% of people in this country named Rivers hail from South Carolina, and second is Georgia with 12%. So
interesting.
Very interesting. I thought that too. Texas, California, and I believe maybe like the big three were like third for you though, as far as when I looked at that. On my side, Burleson comes from Burl, which means son of the butler. So I'm so proud of that.
Right.
You know what? Better than son of a bitch, I guess. Right.
Son yeah.
son of the butler. We'll take it. State with the most Burlesons, Jeff. Do you think do you have any idea?
Texas.
Boom. 28% of all Americans the name Burleson hail in Texas, which I actually knew that. It's not a surprise. There's so many things named after Burleson in this state. State, 12% was North Carolina. That didn't surprise me either because I knew that that's where a lot of the Burlesons went. I've done a little bit of the ancestry thing. I'd need to do more. It's just so much easier to do to go down the father's line because the
right.
males, their names don't change. You
right.
know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so that one, I've actually, it's just so much easier to do that. But yes, you can go to Ancestry.com for the next couple of weeks and type in your name and find out some pretty fascinating little tidbits about
yeah.
that. So just thought that was pretty cool, you know?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for the news. The Wide World of Sports is straight ahead. You're listening to The Chat Room. the late, great Robert Palmer and his ninth top 40 hit, Mercy, Mercy Me, The Ecology, I Want You, which is actually, he took two Marvin Gaye songs and redid those. And let me tell you, Jeff, those are two, if you're going to tackle two songs, and Robert Palmer was already over 40 when he decided to do this. I actually saw, I remember his when he performed this on the Arsenio Hall show. This goes back to, this is in the early 90s. And Arsenio was like, oh, my God. He's like, of all the songs you could pick, he's like, were you not just terrible? He goes, these are tough songs to cover. And he said, right. You know, he said, they were. He said, I practiced on them. He goes, but after I really got them down, he goes, I felt like I had done it. And Arsenio said, my man, you have. He said, this is a great, he goes, I think this is your best, really. And I, you know, I'm usually I like the original because Marvin Gaye's versions are so great as well. But Robert Palmer did a great job combining these two songs. And
definitely.
That was his final top 40 hit. And you know what's amazing, Jeff, is I people forget, and also the reason I said his ninth top 40 hit, he was a solo artist, ninth solo, top, because he was the lead singer of Power Station, who had the hits Some Like It Hot and Get It On, Bang a Gong, with some members from Duran Duran, if you remember, they formed that group in the 80s.
Right.
But a lot of people don't realize Robert Palmer died, and he's actually been dead since September 26th of 2003. He died at the age of 54 from a heart attack. And the reason they don't know that, Jeff, is because it was overshadowed, because just a few days before is when Johnny Cash and John Ritter died on the same day.
Oh, okay.
So it was in that week. Because, you know, they always say it comes in threes.
Right,
and everyone
yeah.
was still, I mean, you know, people were so upset because Johnny Cash was so legendary. We weren't stunned that we were expecting him to die, you know,
right.
because he was, you know, down on his last, you know.
John Ritter was a complete surprise.
Everyone was talking about John Ritter and how blown away. I've never seen anything, you know, and they were just, he was just so beloved. And boy, it really came to, when he died, we found out just how popular John Ritter really was to people. You know what I mean?
Right.
And but unfortunately, you know, Robert Palmer kind of got lost in that mix because, like I said, he died a few days later. And he was from Yorkshire, England, but just very suave, classy. I just like his style and everything about him, you know?
Definitely, definitely.
So, anyway, good stuff from Robert Palmer. Okay, Jeff. Speaking of Mercy, Mercy Me, we're going to let that be the theme of Deflategate, the Deflategate controversy surrounding
oh,
the
mercy.
New England Patriots. Mercy. How about just mercy?
Yeah.
You know. In Boxborough, Massachusetts, saying his team, quote, followed every rule to the letter, New England Patriots coach Bill Belichick described in detail how his team prepares its footballs on game day and defended his players from chatter that they made it to the Super Bowl by cheating. Quote, at no time was there any intent whatsoever to try to compromise the integrity of the game or to gain an advantage, Belichick said in an unscheduled appearance on Saturday afternoon, 8 days before the Patriots will play the Seattle Seahawks for the NFL championship. He said, in fact, quite the opposite. We feel like we follow the rules. We follow the rules of the game to the letter, he said. We try to do everything we right. We err on the side of caution. It's been that way now for many years. Anything that's close, we stay as far away from the line as we can. And I'm going to interject and stop right there because we both know that that's not true, and so do our listeners, because of the whole Spygate controversy from several years ago, if you remember that.
Exactly.
And again, I'm not – that goes on Bill Belichick. I'm not coming down on all of the New England Patriots. I think this particular thing – has to do with Bill Belichick. I find it very hard to believe this head coach who micromanages this team, probably more than any head coach in the league, knew nothing about this. And
right.
also Tom Brady, you know, he was sent out to – he kept throwing everything at him. He came out on Thursday, gave a press conference, and it was just a complete disaster. No
right.
one believed him. John Madden, the former NFL coach and, you know, the legendary broadcaster. Troy Aikman says the only way a ball is going to be deflated is if that quarterback wants that ball deflated, you
right.
know. Even Hines Ward, who's very well respected. Just all of the analysts on ESPN, they didn't believe him. They didn't believe Bill Belichick
right.
either.
We had obvious signs of lying as far as I'm concerned, too. And it's just hard to believe that he didn't have any knowledge of that at all. You know, an 11 of 12 balls, it's pretty unbelievable.
Well, and he went on to say, I'm not a scientist. I'm not an expert in footballs. I'm an expert in football measurements, Belichick said. I'm just telling you what I know. And if you remember, Jeff, a reporter asked him, he said he brought a lot of people in this week. He goes, I know a lot more than I should, is what he was saying, about what goes into the pressure of a football and all that. And one of the reporters asked him if they brought scientists in to explain that.
Right.
He says, we brought people in. I mean, he was just very, you know, he came across as very defensive,
right.
and he filibustered the whole press conference, whereas at least I will give Tom Brady this, that he took a lot of questions. He answered them horribly, and Saturday Night Live chewed them up and spit them out last night, just as we knew they would do.
Right.
So it's actually very funny.
To me, it's, you know, the scientists should have been brought in on this because there you know, was a possibility of, you know, science affecting this, you know, as the colder temperatures affect the air pressure in the ball, just like, you know, you go out and you know, maybe it's been warm and then you have a real cold day and then your tire needs air and then,
right.
you know, in your car.
Right.
So I was considering that, but
and
it sounds like the balls of both teams were under the same
correct.
Conditions,
well,
temperature that, conditions. So.
You know what, Jeff, and he made that analogy. If your car is outside, one of the and I, like I told you yesterday, you know, if there's two cars sitting side by side and one of the cars loses tire pressure, the other car might not necessarily do it, just like the one beside it. But we're talking 11 of 12 footballs for New England did do that, but
right.
none of the 12 right across the field for the Indianapolis
right.
Colts did that.
Well, and then when I hear news that, you know, in the past, you know, he's wanted, you know, the footballs lower anyway. He prefers a lower amount of air. And
Tom Brady.
Talking about Tom Brady,
mm-hmm.
yeah, with 12.5 PSI is what he likes.
Correct.
And which is right on the border of where, you know, that's the minimum it has to be.
Right, right.
And these were like 11, I think, 11 PSI, 11 to 11.5.
Well, and I felt bad. This is Jeff, I like Tom Brady. He's a great quarterback. Bill Belichick has been a great coach. I mean, these guys have done some outstanding work, but they have been plagued by scandal, especially Coach Belichick, you know,
right.
from the whole. And he even defended that. They were punished for that. And I thought it was – he had the audacity to bring that back up yesterday and say that we didn't do anything wrong. Well, the NFL found that you did, and you were punished for it years ago. Why in the world would you drag that back up
right.
to add to this argument of a culture of deception? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I say that lightly because at first when this came out and once it came to light about the 11 of the 12, and they were like, oh, the worst they can do is take away a draft pick. I was like, wrong. I was like, this is a great chance for Roger Goodell to step up. I was very adamant at first about this. I thought they should forfeit the game and call Jim Irsay and say, tell him and the boys to get on a plane and fly to Glendale. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Well, I don't
and call it a forfeit. But after we learned, you know, we learned a lot about this, Jeff. I will say, Jeff and I really went in depth on this, and it wouldn't be
well,
fair. It wouldn't be fair to Rob Gronkowski. It wouldn't be fair to.
It would. Well, the thing is these underdeflated balls were only used in the first half. In the second half, they had perfectly, you know, regulation aired up. Footballs for the second half, in which
Indianapolis
was outscored 28-0, I believe, in the second half.
And you made that argument. If you remember, my argument to you on that was though momentum is a big thing in a game, though too. So if you've got
That's
a huge
true.
Lead going into the second half, that could cause the team maybe not to play as.
Yeah,
I can
definitely see that. But when it's 45-7. I'm pretty sure that.
But if you've got 11
the, you know,
footballs, if you're using different footballs than the other team is, and they're easier to catch, I can see
right.
why it would be 45-7. Though that's my argument on that.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. The game is over. It can't be replayed. You know, New England's going to the Super Bowl, and like I said, the rest of the team shouldn't be penalized for something that Coach
yeah.
Belichick, Tom Brady, and one of the trainers or the ball boys knew about.
And then another thing to mention is teams were suspecting them of deflating balls way before this game.
Including the Colts, when New England played at Indianapolis earlier in the year, and this is something I learned too. One of the cornerbacks intercepted Tom Brady, and he felt the ball, and he was like, this isn't right, and he went over and handed it to the referee. And they're like, this ball does not...
This sounds like this has been an issue for, you know, more than just
one
game.
This
is just when they happened
to
get
caught in the AFC Championship game.
Yes.
Exactly. And... But no, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady did not come off looking very well in this press conference They looked like, well, as Skip Bayless said, you know, let's call it what it is, liars.
Well, and then when the refs go to check the air, they can check it up to 2 hours and 15 minutes before the game time, before we kick off. And that's a long time for, you know, the players to go on the honor system and not, change the conditions of the ball.
Which I found odd as we learned more about that, too, because in the beginning it was not that much time. They were saying it was less time. And as this investigation's gone on, but, you know, there are a lot of people that say that think that if Bill Belichick is found to have known about this, that he should receive the same suspension that Sean Payton, who, of course, is the coach of the New Orleans Saints, for the Bounty Gate. Remember, he was suspended for an entire year as the head coach. So this will go on after the Super Bowl. It's sad that we're talking so much about that instead of the matchups that's, you know, between Seattle and New England, because I do think it'll be a great Super Bowl.
I think so, too.
However, boy, have we seen what a difference a year makes. If you remember last year, because of Richard Sherman going over to and screaming into Aaron Andrews' microphone, Seattle was kind of considered the bad boys of the Super Bowl, and they won the first Super Bowl ever. This year, they're the good guys. It's New England that's the bad boys, you know.
Exactly.
And I'm just, in the things I'm looking for, there's a lot of people rooting for Seattle to beat New England now after this.
Right, I'm one of them.
And, we've got a great fan base in New England, so, it's sad. It's just sad. But if you make a mistake, somebody needs to step up and say, you know what, this is on me. And they haven't done that. So, anyway. In 1975, a young head coach by the name of Mike Krzyzewski, leading a small army program at Gillis Fieldhouse, earned his first career win. Almost 40 years later, at about 60 miles south, he captured number 1,000.
Wow.
Almost like a movie script, history was made today inside Madison Square Garden, the mecca of basketball, as number 5 Duke knocked off St. John 77-68 to help Coach K become the first man in Division I history to reach 4 digits in the win column. So congratulations to Mike Krzyzewski and the job he's done at Duke. And if anybody should be congratulating him, it's you, Jeff, because you pick Duke every year in the March Madness bracket. So
it's an easy bet.
Do you think? Every time can you believe that's already coming up? That's not that far away to the March Madness thing. But every year I make a joke because I'm like, I just know you're going to say Duke.
kind of a perennial team.
But you know what? There are a lot of worse things you could say. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And so if you're going to, go out there, that's not a bad one to pick because they've won several. Let's see. We've got time running short here. Bad news for Cleveland Browns, Jeff. Cleveland Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon may not get another chance in the NFL after failing another drug test. ESPN insider Adam Schefter broke the news today of Gordon's latest off-field misstep. He said Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon flunked another drug test and now will be subject to a one-year banishment, per league sources, with more to come. And he's facing a one-year suspension because he tested positive for alcohol. And because of his DUI, alcohol is one of the substances for which Josh Gordon was being tested. He was not allowed to be drinking alcohol.
Right.
And it's just sad, and all the comments coming down, you know, a waste of talent. Because, Cleveland's really trying to build up their and get this, Jeff. Gordon led the NFL in receiving in 2013, but he had a string of bad decisions, and it saw him suspended for 2 games that year and 11 games this past season. And it's just very sad, especially, they're trying to – Cleveland's trying to get a good team together there with bringing in Johnny Manziel and and looking to the future. And
right.
So you gotta that's why rules are in place, Jeff. You gotta follow the rules.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that's gonna do it for sports. The entertainment update is next, right here on the Chat Report. Sisters and their 12th top 40 hit, Jump for My Love. If you want to take my kisses in the night, then jump, Jeff. Okay, for a moment.
I love that song. Does that not?
Yeah, it's good.
That reminds me of the L.A. Olympics in 1984, because that's what that was. I don't think it was the official song for that. Unofficially, it was. It came out all right when that was all going on. When Los Angeles held that, and this is one that Pointer Sisters could do no wrong. It was one hit after the next. You know what I mean? And just a great group, really. That was actually number three for 2 weeks on the pop charts, and and one of my favorites by them. I love that song actually.
Yeah.
Jump for My Love. You know, there's things that people will ask, and I always say, you know, when we play that before, I like that. You know, if you want my love, if you want to take my kisses in the night, then by God, jump for it. Okay? So. Okay, I'm being a little silly now, but oh well. All right, let's see. Box office results. How about we do that, Jeff? Let's go ahead. Running down the top 10 in the United States domestic box office results for the weekend of January 23rd through the 25th. At number 10, Into the Woods. 9, Mordecai. At 8, Selma, which we just saw and was outstanding. 7, Strange Magic. 6, The Imitation Game. 5, Taken 3. At number 4, The Wedding Ringer. 3, Paddington. Number 2, The Boy Next Door. And number 1, raking in another impressive $64 million, American Sniper, starring Bradley Cooper, which has now made over $200 million.
Wow.
And that's just in, that's domestic, Jeff, not worldwide.
Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
This movie has not been without controversy, of course. The Great American Sniper debate actually continues, Jeff. Filmmaker Michael Moore is firing back at haters who jumped on him for remarks he made about American Sniper and snipers in general, which caused what he calls the ruckus of the past week. Moore tweeted about his uncle who was killed in World War II by a sniper, which taught him to despise snipers. He called them cowards. On January 18th, he sent out a tweet that said, "My uncle was killed by a sniper in World War II. We were taught snipers were cowards. They'll shoot you in the back. Snipers aren't heroes, and invaders are worse." And now in a lengthy Facebook post, Moore says that the right wing has twisted his tweet into Michael Moore hates the troops. But he says he doesn't hate the troops. He details his support for military servicemen and women who spent time in Iraq, saying that the real haters of our brave young men and women would recklessly send them into harm's way for something that had absolutely nothing to do with defending the United States of America. He lays out a long list of things he has done to support the troops, including instituting an affirmative action program that he uses to hire veterans for his films, movie theaters, and film festivals, offering free admittance at his theaters to all active duty military and their families, and regularly raising money for veterans, military families, and wounded warriors. And Moore also goes on to note that he is currently showing American Sniper at his theater in Manistee, Michigan. And you know, and actually, you know, he goes on to even he talks about Clint Eastwood. He goes, "You can't have a conversation about what Clint Eastwood is doing because, you know, he directs this if you haven't seen the film or what he's up to." And regardless of where you are on the political spectrum, you know, he says you'll see that every character in Clint's films comes out dead or permanently damaged. And he said that, and he goes on to say that Clint Eastwood made maybe one of the greatest westerns ever in The Unforgiven. But now it's sad to see him talking to an empty chair on a stage or making an Iraq movie that Rolling Stone this week called too dumb, quote, too dumb to bother criticizing. And that was a review from Matt Taibbi, who called American Sniper a, quote, simple, well-lit little fairy tale with the nutritional value of a fortune cookie. Ouch. Ouch. And, you know, I respect Michael Moore. He has a job to do, and he did a great job when he made the Fahrenheit 9/11 movie. He's done some great things. Other movies as well. And Roger and Me, that stands out as well. But on this particular issue,
a little over the top.
Absolutely. And for the Rolling Stone interviewer to say that. This is based on a true story. So, you
right.
know, and...
And I want to see it soon.
And they... Again, a guy defending him on CNN the other day says, we do a job. The politicians make the rules, and we go out and do what they tell us to do, he said. No, we don't decide this. He said, they're the ones that tell us what to do, and we go do it.
Right.
And so, you know, he said, you can say what you want, and but he took great issue with, he said, talking about courage, and he said courage for Michael Moore would be going an entire day without eating. And and I was like, and I was like, ouch,
yeah.
It's getting pretty tough here.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. Top 10 albums of the week. Jeff at number 10, slipping three spots. 2014 Forest Hills Drive by J. Cole. Dropping from number 6 to 9, Hozier by Hozier. Moving back into the top 10, moving up 7 spots from number 15 to 8, Maroon 5 and 5, or V, if you want to say that. At number 7, dropping 3 spots, In a Lonely Hour by Sam Smith. Dropping to number 6 from being number 3 last week, The Pink Print by Nicki Minaj. Debuting at number 5, Uptown Special by Mark Ronson. Slipping 2 notches to number 4, Ed Sheeran and X. Debuting at number 3, Kidz Bop 27 by the Kidz Bop Kids. Slipping finally, Jeff, to number 2, Taylor Swift and 1989, meaning there's a new number 1 album, and that belongs to Meghan Trainor, and the name of the album is simply Tidal. So Meghan Trainor knocked Taylor Swift off her perch. She'd been up there for a while. And for the 3rd consecutive week, the number 1 song on Billboard's Hot 100 Singles chart is Uptown Funk by Mark Ronson featuring Bruno Mars. And just to, not to be confused with Uptown Girl by Billy Joel. And the reason I say that is because people confuse Iggy Azalea with Iggy Pop. So there's a huge difference there.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Some of these people kill me. Somebody actually wrote to me and is like, is Iggy Azalea Iggy Pop? You know, is that Iggy? No. Yeah, but, you know, whatever. After endlessly teasing her next album on social media, Rihanna has finally given fans a taste of some new music. 4 or 5 Seconds, released Saturday night, is an acoustic guitar-driven track featuring Kanye West and Paul McCartney on keyboard. It comes just 3 weeks after West and McCartney released a new collaboration, Only One, a sweet and soulful ballad told from the perspective of West's late mother, Donda. And although audio has been pulled from various sites, you can find 4 or 5 Seconds on Rihanna's website at rihannanow.com and on iTunes. And Rihanna excitedly reacted to the new music in a video on Instagram, as did many fans on Twitter. And one of the funny thing is that one of the fans, one of the tweets I read was, I don't know who Paul McCartney is, but Rihanna is going to give this man a career with this new song. And, of course, you know, Jeff, that goes back to the morons who I say that, and I say that with love. But some of Kanye West fans, when he did that collaboration with Paul McCartney a few weeks ago, Twitter was abuzz. Kanye's found new talent. I think this Paul McCartney guy may have a future in music. Kanye's got a great ear for talent. You just want to go, who in the hell doesn't know who Paul McCartney is? I don't care if you're 10 years old.
Right.
He's a Beatle. The Beatles are the most successful group of all time, and Paul McCartney, as a solo artist, is one of the 10 most successful solo artists in Billboard history without the Beatles. So I just think,
right.
If you remember, Jeff, I just laughed. I thought, idiots, morons, know
right.
what you're doing. Before you get on and start tweeting, know what you're talking about. I just thought that was just crazy, absolutely crazy. All right, Jeff. It's time for celebrity birthdays. And, yeah, don't you love the fact that I found my missing bell?
Right, exactly.
That was opening the season for our listeners that weren't there. my bell had gone missing, and I was like, so it was a big mystery. But anyway,
exactly.
And I thought about celebrity birthdays. I use this term lightly today. There's some. I mean, you know, it's well, to each their own. Callum Hood of 5 Seconds to Summer is the big 19 today. Actor Michael Trevino, Jeff, of The Vampire Diaries.
I'm going to say 28.
Plus two, 30. How about singer Alicia Keys?
Alicia Keys, I'm going to have to say 36.
Minus two, 34 for Alicia. She's just been around a long time, so I'm going to defend you on that because I can see where you would think that. She got a start, early start and very, very talented. Singer Kina of Brownstone is 46. Actress Dinah Manoff of Empty Nest fame.
Oh, boy.
And many movies as well.
I'm going to say 53.
57, actually, for her.
Oh.
So, yes. Actress Lee Taylor Young is 70. And last but not least, actor Dean Jones is 84 years young. So, happy birthday to all those celebrities celebrating a birthday and any of our listeners. You can find Jeff and I on Facebook at Chad Burleson or Jeff Rivers. You can find us on Twitter at The Chad Reports. The Chad Report is distributed by Blog Talk Radio and is a CJ Scorpio Entertainment production. Thanks, everyone.